Hi, everyone. This is Brenda speaking, and welcome to the IRP IoT Consolidation Working Group call on the 9th of November, 2020 at 1900 UTC. I think it's actually 2000 UTC. Attending today's, our attendance will be taken via the Zoom room. We do have apologies from Flip and Sam, and this meeting is recorded. I'll turn the call over to the group. Thank you very much.
Thank you. So hi, everyone. It's Susan here. Thanks for joining and making the time to volunteer for this small group, which is the one that we're hoping can advance the straw person draft on the rule 7, which is the rule that deals with consolidation, intervention, and participation as an amicus. It seemed to me that we'd made a reasonable amount of progress in various calls, and I thought taking it out of the full working group and into a small group to work a bit more agilely would be the way to go. I mean, whether that's proved correct is remains to be seen, but hopefully we can make some progress. As I said before we started the recording, I wasn't really anticipating that I was kind of going to be leading the call. But I, you know, did do a bit of, I have done, you know, obviously a bit of thinking about this over time. There are a handful of us. So unless you are very keen to stand on formality, I'd propose, you know, since there are just really hardly any of us, we just, you know, just feel free to speak. We don't necessarily need to start using hands unless it's becoming unmanageable. So let's just view this as a discussion. And then having said that, I think in the absence of other suggestions of a good place to start, I actually thought that the document that's called IOTEL Considerations for Rule 7, which is an email that Liz had sent actually, you know, back in September now on some issues for us to think about. It's probably as good a place as any to run through. Thank you. Let's get my screen back. Yeah. And when I was giving some thought to this and doing a bit of, you know, sort of last minute preparation late this afternoon, I was coming up with my own list and actually hadn't remembered that we had this list from Liz. And so, you know, the first one on that was the procedures officer sort of, you know, in Liz's question, which obviously we've had subsequent calls after that, but, you know, is are we updating the role? And I think subsequent calls would suggest that yes. And we, on our last full working group call where we discussed this, we talked about two possible options, one being the second of which was being favored, which was borrowing the concept of the consolidation arbitrator from the ICDR rules, but sort of amending it to reflect the differences that we have in our procedure. You know, it's our IRP process isn't identical to an ICDR arbitration, but that seemed to be a helpful way forward. And I think there was a lot of support for having, you know, ensuring that the procedures officer is empowered to make decisions.
Susan, do you mind if I make a comment on that?
Please, yeah.
So I would agree that the way that the procedures officer is defined was problematic in the Afilius arbitration. The procedures officer who was appointed in the Afilius IRP had an opinion that the position had no clear meaning and that he couldn't perform the duties assigned to him as under the rules. So I agree that, you know, it would be helpful to define the procedures officer's role and duties explicitly. And like you said, noting that it's unique to the IRP process. I guess maybe this is something that might have got over my head in the last time we spoke about it. When you say that if we are going to hew to the same definition of a procedures officer appointed by the ICDR, do you mean the emergency panelist role as appointed in the ICDR? And if so, it seems like an emergency panelist as referred to in the ICDR could be expanded to include all the preliminary issues that arise before a full panel is constituted, such like interim relief, intervention, consolidation, and kind of amicus participation. So, and then the other thing that we could do that it sounds like there isn't that much support for is to dispense with the label and position altogether. But it does sound like people are more interested in sort of defining this position and keeping it.
Thanks, Helen. Well, yeah, defining. I mean, one issue is do we keep the term procedures officer? And that to me is a sort of lesser issue, but it does seem as though the terminology in itself has caused a bit of confusion. But yes, I think the, you know, absent views to the contrary, I think you need someone who can opine on things like, you know, requests to consolidate. I think still stands. Because almost certainly those sorts of requests are going to be happening before you have your IRP panel in place. And so you are going to need someone to do it. But yes, it seems to me that this, it's almost by calling them the procedures officer, that's almost, you know, given the person who was taking that role to believe that he didn't have the power to be, to make arbitral decisions, if you like, even preliminary ones. Or procedural ones.
Susan, I have two questions when it's okay to jump in. Yeah, I totally agree with what Helen has said, and she's brought to my attention apparently something that occurred in an actual hearing setting. And I think that's very valuable. And I'd like to know if we have access to a transcript or anything of some of the specific limitations that this person who had to actually fulfill this role ran into. I'm a panelist for the World Intellectual Property Organization, also had done a PICDRP proceeding, and I know that there are things that come up that perhaps we never realized were going to be part of the decision-making process, and that's a very, not a good place to be in, because you don't want to go beyond the bounds of what your role is. The term officer, I think, is what some of us are kind of grappling with, of where that plays out. And I don't know what that, my second question is, what is the genesis of that particular term? If that's something that really does have a policy and a bylaw, a background, and I don't have all of that at my fingertips right now to see, you know, where it came from. But the term officer seems broad to me versus panelist. You know, a procedures panelist might be a subset within the panel that's going to deal with something that is a temporary, but I know that there's other, I mean, it almost sounds like parliamentarian, you know, that they're going to determine what steps have to be taken for a particular procedure to be implemented or to be applied. And without any better definition, I can clearly see where that would have been a struggle or a challenge for someone put in the role of having to engage or actually decide based on the term. So I'm more troubled by the word officer. And I just don't know where that finds itself in this particular setting. If Flip was here, perhaps he could put some meat on those bones, but I just, at this point, that's what I'm struggling with.
Okay, thanks.
So sorry, this is Helen, if I can jump in. The declaration of the procedures officer in the affiliates IRP, I believe it is online. On the ICANN website. If I can find it at my fingertips, I can send it along.
Great. Thank you, Helen. I appreciate it.
Hi, this is Liz Lay for ICANN Legal.
I can access, get you an access to the declaration, and I'll put it into the chat in a second. In terms of the question that Scott posed about the genesis of the procedures officer, I think it developed, and this was before I joined the IoT in the last round, go around, but I think it developed as part of the discussion that commenced before then. It's not a term that's based in the bylaws at all. I think it was something that the groups came to agree upon. Again, I don't have the genesis on it, but I can say that it's not based in the bylaws. And I think, you know, where with the discussion, we've laid out where the discussion has gone in terms of the research that we've been asked to put together and the various, if we were to change the term procedures officer and the role procedures officer, we've outlined the various areas that we've seen similar roles in the ICDR consolidation arbitrator, the ICC and whatnot, all their roles. Yeah. I think one of the things that Helen was mentioning about whether or not this becomes a role for akin to an emergency panelist, that's an interesting discussion. And I think that might be worth something for us to also explore. I mean, we have here in the current rules, as you know, we have the role of the procedures officer, and then we have a separate role for an emergency panelist. And I guess, I don't know, Helen, are you suggesting that we encapsulate and empower one person with both of these authorities?
Sorry, double mute is hard to manage. So I don't know that I have a defined opinion currently. I guess I was just asking whether the concept that we were taking from the ICDR was referring to more of an emergency panelist. But I do think your idea, Liz, might be a good one because it maybe empowers this person more than perhaps in a real life example, this procedures officer felt empowered. So if that would, obviously this is only one scenario, but if this is something that could help future emergency panelists or procedures officers or whatever we would want to call it, that might be an interesting way to look at least an example of how to model it.
Yeah, I think it's a really good suggestion, actually. And I hadn't really been thinking of it in that way, but the generally speaking, there are a few areas. There's this one. We know that there's in relation to requests for translation services, there might be a need for an emergency panelist. There could be a scenario where someone needs interim relief, where they would need an emergency panelist. And so in some cases, you might never need one at all. But in other cases, there may be one or more of these kind of preliminary decisions that need to get made before the actual panel is in place. And if we're thinking about a world where we have a standing panel of sort of seven or so individuals, it would actually be quite beneficial, it seems to me, to be able to kind of, you know, if we use up one of those standing panelists for a consolidation hearing, and then we use a different one for an application for interim relief, and then, you know, perhaps there's also a request for translation services, and, you know, we used a different one, we've suddenly only got four panelists left who could form the actual panel. And so sort of having kind of one person, you know, take on any of these kind of interim measures, anything that comes up urgently before the full panel's in place, does seem like just proceed practically seems like it would be actually quite useful.
Susan, this is Scott again. I just wanted to note that the ICC rules do have something referred to as an emergency arbitrator within their rules and have specific provisions related to that. And the ICDR probably does as well. I just haven't had a chance to review that, but I think we're getting at really what's at the heart of it. And that is that procedures officer, I don't think really hits the nail on the head in terms of what we're trying to articulate and the concept that we're trying to get across. And whether or not the one that's originally appointed, the person who's originally appointed as the emergency arbitrator or the emergency panelist, however you want to provide it, the way that it would make sense, I guess, and I think this is what the ICC provides, is that once the panel is constituted, the actual panel, then whatever has been decided by that person can be subject to review, by that panel as well. And whether or not that means they can or cannot be part of that panel, I'd have to research further, but I note that that's one of the things it appears to provide.
Yeah, okay.
This is Helen. One thing occurs to me that maybe you all probably have already thought of, but I guess as a background matter, are there any ICANN procedural requirements that might prevent us from being more flexible with this, redefining this role? Or are we kind of boxed in by anything? Is there some leeway in this matter?
Hey, so it's Liz. I am not aware of any ICANN procedural requirement that would prevent us from exploring this. I mean, the procedures officer is something that came about at the development of the last round of the supplementary procedures. When we were doing the research, I will say that we did, in terms of what other similar rules out there that would be akin to this, we did take a look at the supplementary procedure, and we did note that other than the emergency panelist, there's only three places that you have decision points here, which is you have a procedures officer and then you have emergency panelists. Now we have the translation, then we have the panel. So in that way, we're going to explore this discussion. You have these various disjointed points before you have the panel itself does. And does it make sense then for us to empower those authority in translation, emergency relief, and the consolidation rule 7 into one person? Maybe that's something we want to consider. The only thing that I would call our attention to is whether or not this would constitute some kind of a material change to what we put out there in the last public comment period. And if we do go this route where we empower it, this authority as one person, we might have to go back out for public comment again if this constitutes a material change.
Okay,
that's very helpful.
Yeah, thank you. Well, I suppose that's something we can think about. Perhaps that's something we have to take back to the wider group, isn't it? If we were proposing that. But if we just for present purposes view this person as a sort of, I'm trying to think of a term that we can use. I mean, maybe the term consolidation arbitrator is the term to use for now, because that's the sort of concept of the role that we're looking at. And then we have a sort of overarching question, which we'll have to kind of circle back to, which is, do we make that consolidation arbitrator actually just an emergency, you know, an emergency panelist type role that deals with all of these preliminary issues, as opposed to potentially having different ones? I think we all seem agreed. I mean, I'm not particularly, not necessarily even really proposing that we change the role of the procedurals officer so much as we're just trying to make it better understood by the parties who are then using them, and indeed by the person who's holding that post themselves, about what they can and can't do. And it seems as though, since in the case where it happened, that the procedures officer didn't really appreciate that he was entitled to or empowered to make decisions, and so that's sort of fairly unhelpful. So I mean, shall we just for kind of present purposes think of them as rather than a procedures officer, think of them as a consolidation arbitrator. with perhaps, you know, some particular powers that we sort of formally allocate to them.
So that's different from combining that in the emergency panelist role, right? The terminology is getting confused.
Yeah, sorry. I'm not sure. I suppose if we think that it makes sense to combine it, maybe we just make that decision and that's what we propose to the wider group. But either way, I think we want this role to be more of a panelist role, don't we? Rather than, sorry, I'm not making much sense.
Susan, just a note, I put in the chat a link to a Locke Lord article on the use of emergency arbitrators, and it does a comparative analysis between the ICDR, the ICC, and the London Court of International Arbitration. I have no skin in this. I don't work for Locke Lord. I don't know how various people who are here today or in the greater group feel about them as their counsel, but I think they're a respected firm. So I just thought I'd provide that and see if people would find it helpful.
Thanks, Scott. Yeah, I'm sure it will be. Okay. But if we leave aside other aspects of the, you know, if we determine that we think that this role actually ought to be an emergency panelist, when the emergency panelist is wearing the hat of having to decide a request for consolidation or intervention, we presumably, I think what I've heard from Liz and Sam and Helen is that it would be helpful for that person when he's wearing that particular hat to have a better understanding of what his job is and what his kind of powers are. That we could presumably help flesh out. Does that sound right?
Yeah, Susan, I would agree with that. This is Helen. I guess my question is it appropriate or favorable to sort of combine the duties of the procedures officer and the emergency panelist into one? And then I guess that would, you know, beget the obvious question of whether the previous IRP IOT had a reason for separating them, whether or not, you know, instilling too much power in one person, although it doesn't seem like this is all that much power. And then if we're going to recommend, then we'd have to think about, as Liz said, the idea of going before a public comment period again. So I guess those are the considerations in my mind.
Yeah.
I agree with Liz to a certain extent, but I'm also concerned if we have to me, emergency means that it's temporal and it's something that is something that really has to be done now, like a temporary restraining order or something that calls for immediate action or very short-term action. And it also has the potential to have a dispositive effect, which could be, you know, should require perhaps more thinking about, is this authority appropriate in this context? And I mean, that's why I think that the analysis that Locke Lord did, I think they also talk about, you know, the fact that whatever the emergency arbitrator does can be vacated, modified, or accepted by the panel that's ultimately appointed. So it's not like they are without oversight. And I think that's important. But in terms of the name that this is given, I'm still struggling with procedures officer if emergency is a subset of that, you know, can it be one and the same or are they two separate things? And, you know, how does the procedures officer differ? Can you have a procedures officer that is not appointed on an emergency basis?
Yeah, Bernard.
Thank you. Just from a historical perspective, the previous groups didn't really spend much time at all on this. It was a request. I think something was put in there. And then from the first use, we had this issue, and everyone agreed that the reconstituted IoT should have a more serious go at it to understand what we're trying to do. So I don't think there was any kind of significant discussion on the power or anything else.
Great.
Okay. I mean, I think in terms of should there be a second public comment, I think it may be that there should, but I think on one of our very early calls of this IoT group, there was a feeling that probably anything we were going to come up with ought to go out to public comment because, you know, we were likely to be making some fairly significant changes to some of the rules, and that given that there've been a set of temporary rules under, you know, in place for a while, that it would probably would be appropriate for what we come up with to go out for public comment. And so I think this is just another one that's in the mix. In terms of urgency, I mean, I think it's not the concept of seeking an order for consolidation or intervention. It's not urgent in the sense of you needing some urgent interim relief that I think is the concept that the emergency arbitrator tends to be considered for, but it is urgent in the sense of, you know, we need to talk about the timing still of this, but it is something that has to happen fairly promptly in the procedure, otherwise, or, you know, in both procedures, otherwise, you know, the moment has passed whereby the sort of the savings that you would hope a consolidation or intervention would bring in terms of, you know, disposing of proceedings in an efficient manner would get lost. So I think it is kind of a matter where a sort of an urgent determination is required, because to leave it, you know, is essentially means that the opportunity to do this consolidation gets lost. So in that sense, I think it seems to me that if we want to allocate this to someone who's wearing the sort of role of an emergency panelist, I think that seems reasonable.
Hi, Susan, it's Liz again. So I checked with Sam, and there was no discussion in the prior group in terms of the roles had to be separate for an emergency panelist versus the procedure officer. That was not something that was brought into discussion. And so, I mean, I think if we want to continue exploring this and empowering into one person, perhaps one thing we can do is consult with the ICDR rule on what currently is allowed in their emergency panelists, and then we can explore if we need to add on to that or to be able to empower that person to do to make decisions on consolidation as well as translation. Maybe that's one place we can start.
Yeah, that sounds sensible. Because I think I can't remember our rules well enough now, but do our current rules have a concept of an emergency panelist, or do we just fall back on the ICDR rules if the circumstances arise? Do you recall?
We have that an interim relief would be decided by an emergency panelist, but I do not believe that we specify on the role, the authority of an emergency panelist, which makes me, I believe that means that it defaults to the ICDR rules on what an emergency panelist would do.
Yeah, I think that's right. That would be my understanding if we haven't got anything specific. And that was my vague recollection, but I don't remember entirely. So yes, I think you're right then. Thanks, Liz. I think that's a possible path forward, is to look at whether we need to enhance what the ICDR provisions are on emergency panelists in order to have them, you know, be able to take on these other tasks that we think would be useful.
Susan, this is Scott again. Before I miss it, from what Liz just said, what I'm hearing is that perhaps there needs to be a tie between procedures officer and emergency panelist, so that we can avail ourselves of the ICDR rule relating to emergency panelist. Because without it, I mean, that might have been the missing link that would have given the prior procedures officer a better understanding of their role, and unless I'm missing something.
Well, I'm not sure you are missing anything, Scott. I'm sure the group, when they drafted these rules, felt that they were giving the procedures officer the information that they needed in order to be able to make these decisions. But obviously on the basis of just the single case that we've got as an example, but it clearly didn't work on the ground. So, okay, I'm just scribbling notes. Okay, shall we?
Susan, it's Liz.
Yeah.
I pulled up our current supplementary procedures, and there is some provisions on what an emergency panelist can do. If it's helpful, what I can do to guide our discussion further for this group is I can put together something that compares what is set out for the emergency panelist and our rules versus the ICDR rules on an emergency panelist, and see if there's overlap or if there is contradictions, then maybe that can help guide our discussion further.
Yeah, thank you, Liz. That would be really helpful. Yeah. Okay. Okay. I'm sort of having a look at what else we might usefully cover. Time frames is quite challenging to cover, I think, in the abstract. That's probably one we have to come back to. Do we need additional procedural steps? If so, what procedural steps are missing? I think that goes to what the sort of test is for when one allows these applications. And again, I think, I didn't come on this call sort of planning to be in the driving seat, so I'm sorry if I'm casting about a little bit. Perhaps it's useful, why don't we have a discussion about point five? Maybe that's the easiest one. Oh, and I'm busy trying to scroll up on the screen, and I realize it's not my screen. In terms of recomposition, we did have a bit of a discussion on this on the last call, I think, in terms of how do we deal with an existing panel. And this is really about sort of, you know, what happens if you're consolidating two actions, and one is perhaps a little bit further along than the other, so that they already have their three-person panel in place. How do we deal with that in terms of, you know, does that panel continue and now becomes the panel for the consolidated proceedings, or not? And I think That is probably worth us having a bit of a discussion about. I'm going to quickly ask Brenda if you wouldn't mind pulling up the straw person version of the rules, if you can.
Okay, so that is the document that's called Rule 7 Consolidation?
I think it's called Rule 7 Markup.
Okay, thanks. Yep, I'll get that. Here it comes. There you go.
Oh, yay.
I don't know why there are boxes in this.
I think it's where there's comments, but why? I don't know why it comes out like that. I think it's where it was annotated.
Those are comments. That's exactly right.
Yeah. So the place I'm thinking about would be on the next page. And it's there. I think this will do it. So if we start from the bit just below the bullets, ABC, so the next paragraph in what I proposed said, I'd proposed that where IRPs are consolidated. So this is, again, consolidations where you've got two different actions that have both been commenced and you're deciding to pull them into one. That they should be consulted, basically the later one gets consolidated into the earlier one, unless there's some agreement to the contrary or unless a decision by the procedures officer slash consolidation arbitrator slash whatever name we want to call him. And that is something that was reflected from the ICDR rules. So this wasn't something that I just made up, but that's how the ICDR handled it. And then more specifically in terms of the panel itself. And again, I tried to kind of pick something that sort of mirrored the process that's in the ICDR, which is that if there's already a panel in place for that first IRP that you're consolidating into, that panel should stay in place and you shouldn't disband them. Again, you know, all of this being subject to a decision to the contrary by the procedures officer. And I think that makes sense, but obviously subject to the thoughts of you, Helen, and Scott, and indeed Liz. But then moving on, what seems to me to be quite likely to happen is that you would have no panel in place on either of the two proceedings that you're consolidating together. And so then how do you appoint the panel where you now have, obviously in the normal course of events, the claimants would expect to appoint one panelist, ICAM would expect to appoint one panelist, and then the collective, the two panelists appoint the third panelist. So you've now got sort of two sets of claimants and they can't each appoint a panelist because there's only space for three. So my suggestion had been that they ought to try to agree on a panelist between them because they've collectively consolidated their actions together and therefore they have to now, you know, run them as such, as co-claimants. And so that was what I'd suggested in the straw person, but it did cause a bit of discussion on the call. I'm not sure that there was necessary agreement or indeed that anyone felt very strongly that it was the wrong decision, but I didn't really feel that we'd come out with a definite conclusion on it. So I think that one's something that's worth exploring. I don't know, actually, indeed, Helen, in your case, did this come up at all?
I'm sorry. My little one has a fever, so I was slightly in and out.
Oh, sorry. Yeah. And this is the perfect time for a call, isn't it? No, it's just
the appointment of the panelist. He just went from a nap at like 3:30 and had it occur. So I've been kind of running around. But I'm sorry. Did what come up?
Did the issue of how the panelist should be appointed or consolidating into the did either of your actions already have a panel in place when in the Aphilius case? And if not.
No, the panel was not in place.
And was there
Go ahead.
Yeah, sorry, carry on.
The panel was not in place. I think my recollection is that we vetted or the affiliates or the parties vetted several known people who could be available and interviewed them and checked for conflicts of interest and things like that.
So basically the kind of collective claimants came up with one panelist between them.
So Aphilius and ICANN did that, I believe, and they approved amongst themselves. I don't know that the amicus had any.
Yeah, I guess it's different for an amicus, isn't it? They wouldn't really get to determine who the panelist was.
Right.
Yeah, sure. Okay.
So, but I do believe that if, you know, you had a standing panel, things would be handled much differently. And then of course that caused a lot of delays because people weren't available and things of that sort. And I don't know, and maybe Scott or Liz could have more insight into this, whether a procedures officer had ever really been appointed before. It seemed like from Mr. Donahue's position that it wasn't, but I think it's possible that someone else had been in that position in a different case, but I don't think it's, you know, very numerous.
Helen, this is Scott. I wasn't sure when you were speaking if you mentioned amicus, you mentioned you all as a party, and you mentioned ICANN, but there was no second claimant. Was this a consolidation or not a consolidation?
My apologies. So ICANN and Aphilius were the parties in the IRP. VeriSign and NDC were applying to be amicus.
Ah, okay.
So we weren't attempting to consolidate. No.
Oh, okay. I just wanted to be sure. I wasn't sure if there was another party, yes. But at any rate, yeah. There still was a procedures officer in place is what I'm hearing.
Right.
Okay.
Or they put a procedures officer in place to decide whether the status of amicus should be granted to the to VeriSign and NDC.
Got it.
Yeah, sorry, Helen. I was misremembering and was thinking of that action as being a consolidation one, but it wasn't. So in terms of an action where there is a consolidation between two cases, does this suggestion that I made, which is basically that if one of the actions already has a panel in place, that panel would continue, does that seem reasonable? And secondly, if there is no panel, does it seem reasonable to expect the now two separate but consolidated claimants should be agreeing one panelist between them, with ICANN agreeing the other panelist and then the two panelists choosing the third? I mean, does that seem like a reasonable path forward? I felt that was kind of more or less mirroring what the ICDR rules suggest, but
Susan, you know,
Yeah.
This is Scott. Just a quick, if I can make it quick, because it's very complex in one sense. And that is, it seems to me, if there's already a panel selected, it makes sense from an efficiency standpoint that, well, okay, they understand and there's a similar body of fact that they're analyzing against the bylaws, et cetera, the issues, if consolidation is going to happen. But I guess my question would be, does first in time necessarily mean that that would be the panel that is best suited? If there's a panel in the other proceeding, for example, and that panel is, even though it's second in time, it's for whatever reasons, more experienced, more robust, it's had more things done more efficiently, perhaps maybe they're further along, even though they started later. I guess the question is, what is the mediating factor to allow that second panel? Because it almost sounds like a merger, you know, who is going to be the surviving panel? Or does it allow, or should we allow, for the panels to be interwoven, so to speak? Just a couple of thoughts.
Yeah, thank you. And this goes back to the standing panel concept, actually, and maybe Liz can help me with this one. We obviously are expecting a standing panel to be in place soon, which would be seven or so, you know, sort of people standing in readiness to be called down to form panels for these IRP actions. In that, where once there is a standing panel in place, how are the panelists appointed? Does it is there still a process where me as a claimant, I get to choose one of those seven and say, I'd like, you know, panelist number one, and ICANN would choose panelist number seven, and then panelist number one and number seven pick the third person? Or is there just a kind of like a taxi rank of it's sort of, you know, it's the turn of these three to be the panel for this action? Do you know, or indeed is that something we have to decide because it's not been dealt with before?
Hi, it's Liz. So we haven't dealt with a standing panel yet. And based on the bylaws, it provides that once there's a standing panel in place, the claimant and ICANN shall each select one panelist, and then the two panelists selected will then select a third party from the standing panel.
Okay. So that's still the same kind of concept then. It's just at the moment people are calling them from wherever because there is no standing panel to select from.
Right, that's correct. And then I do want to add to the discussion that we're having, the one instance that we've had a consolidation there, we didn't come across this issue because basically the two IRPs were filed within a month of each other. And so they essentially I believe that there had not been a panel in place yet. And the two parties agreed to consolidate, and then there was a panel that was picked.
And so did the two claimants just pick their single panelist collectively?
Yeah, they were both represented by the same lawyer. So okay. I think that made it easier. It was Fleet who represented both parties.
Okay, that's helpful.
Just a note that I'm still chuckling over the term taxi rank. Love that as a cultural distinction. I think what we would probably say here in the States, something as pedestrian as rotation, but taxi rank is so much clearer and graphic. I love it.
I always assumed that was a term that gets used widely in the UDRP because it comes up quite a lot in the RPM's working group, but it might just be that it's used in the nominate process. They always talk about appointing their panelists on a taxi rank basis. And so maybe it is
I'm definitely British adopting reference. It. I'm definitely maybe adopting it.
Maybe it's a British reference and I didn't even realize it.
Absolutely. It's delightful.
Oh, we're so quaint. Okay. They chose. Okay. All right. Look. So
It's nearly the top of the hour. We haven't made a huge amount of progress, but I think we've made some. I wonder what the next steps are. I mean, it would be nice to keep going. I mean, do you think it's been useful having this kind of discussion on a call rather than trying to circulate sort of suggested markups and drafts and so on? Or do you think, I guess I'm asking Helen and Scott particularly, do you think this has been useful, or do you think we might usefully have made more progress by trying to circulate something?
I think this has been extremely useful. I think going back and forth on email would use up a lot more time. Okay. And kind of right. Not allow us to get rid of ideas that, you know, don't end up working out. And so, and you might miss emails here and there or not be able to do that. I still think it's an iterative process and may take, you know, more time, but I personally have found that to be very helpful.
Oh, super. Well, then that's great. So then I think maybe then the next step is for us to just try and reconvene. Hopefully we'll get Christina as well.
I echo what Helen had to say. Absolutely. I think it's been very helpful. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So then let's try and have another one of these then in you know, the next sort of, you know, well, as soon as we can fit one in. As I say, it's been really useful having you guys. If Flip was able to join us, obviously he's got a lot of experience and I know Christina does too. So, you know, I do think it'd be valuable if we can try and get a time that they all can do, albeit it's, you know, does tend to get impossible to, you know, everyone has so many calls on their time. Bernard. Not hearing you.
Sorry, it would help if I was double muted. Just to not leave the timing up in the air, should we match up to the timing of our full IoT calls, but the week where we don't have a full IoT call? Would that make sense?
Yeah, I think it probably would.
So that way we're sure to get most people. That time was checked for most people. And then we could have a follow-up call in 2 weeks from now, plus one day, because it would be on a Tuesday.
Yeah, I mean, does that make sense to you, Helen and Scott? I mean, I'm conscious we might lose quite a lot of momentum. That's the only thing, but it is quite hard to find times that people can do.
Susan, this is Scott. One comment. I know sometimes on our full en banc, or however you want to refer to it, IoT calls, there are some very high level and sophisticated discussions that occur between, I guess it's Tony and some of the other folks who have served on the board. My only concern is sometimes we're looking at wordsmithing or it's bigger than that, obviously, with defined terms that are in the policy. But I just wonder if one of them, or obviously Flip with his experience, should also be a part of these, just in case we miss something.
Well, so Flip was meant to join us, but unfortunately he had to send apologies. I think he just couldn't make this call. So we are hoping, you know, we're hoping that Flip will be with us. And obviously anything that we come up with here, Scott, we'll have to get sense checked back with the full group. You know, sure. This is really just to try and, to move the wordsmithing along a little bit, but also to sort of, you know, we were in the whole group. I felt like we weren't making that much progress on some of the trickier items, and it seemed like it was ripe for sort of spinning off a smaller group who could be a bit more focused.
Absolutely, a great idea. So glad we did it. Okay.
All right. So yeah, Ben, why don't we look at that, at doing the alternate Tuesday between the main call, and then we can, you know, hopefully as a group we can, if we feel we want to meet more quickly than that, we can
we can all agree that amongst ourselves and organize something a bit sooner. And we can also, you know, kind of try and keep the discussion going a bit further on the email anyway.
Okay, great. So I would then propose that we would have a call on November 24th at 1900 UTC.
That sounds okay. Yeah, that sounds okay for me anyway. I'm on vacation, but I can do, since I can't go anywhere because I'm now locked down again. What difference does it make?
All right. So Brenda will send around an invite for Great. This consolidation group, Tuesday, November 24th, 1900 UTC, for 1 hour, or do we want to try and push that to 90 minutes?
I'm happy if other people want to do 90 minutes. I would have to drop after an hour because there's subsequent procedures is
all right. Well, then let's leave it at 1 hour then. Okay. Super. Thank you.
All righty. Thanks, everyone.
Thank you.
Thank you, Susan.
Thank you very much.
Bye.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye now.
Bye.